one hand out, people
yeah, very simple way of explaining five aggregates. On the other hand, there's very complicated ways of explaining five aggregates. You can go into very deep philosophical arguments about aggregates and so on. On the other hand, it's a very simple thing. If you look at what is taught by the Buddha in the earliest scripture, actually it's a very, very simple thing. You can say that it's just about life. Life. L-I-F-E. For quite a long time, a lot of people were arguing with themselves, you know, as to the purpose of life. Why am I here for? Sometimes you get some hateful people who come and approach you and just want to sell you some religion and say, okay, what is the purpose of life? Why are you here for? Right? And the reason why they ask this question is most people don't care, don't give a damn of what life is all about. Neither do they. And those who really give some thought about it, sometimes they approach from the wrong angle and get so muddled in their own arguments that they lost the plot. Right? So when this sort of things happen, then a lot of people will give you their 20 cents worth of what is life. They tell you what it is all about, you know, and then eventually lead us into some form of belief and so on. But when you look at the Buddhist or the Buddha's teaching, most of his teachings are centered on this life. When you look at the precepts, what is the precepts all about? It's how we lead our life. You look at meditation, what is all about? And meditation is to find out what life is all about. And now, before we can go into the purpose of life and so on, we got to know what is this actually, what is life? What makes life? It's very simple actually. You know, when we're going to talk about this, I would say try not to look at other people, but try to look within yourself. Look into your own life rather than other people's life. It's not a scientific experiment where it's very objective, you know, you get a person and check and prod and look into their lives. So the basic thing which is involved in life will be a body and a mind. Right? Just that body and the mind. Without the mind, the body is useless, right, for you. Without your mind, you can't come here at all. Because it's your mind that brings you here. And without the mind, the mind won't be able to function. Of course, some people will tell you that now there are beings who exist just on the mind. That is belief. It's not something which is solid, which you can really prove. Some people tell me that, there are beings with mind who is around here, he's listening to your Dharma talk and making judgment about you. Well, you can believe as much as you want, but I don't think that can happen. No. Because the mind has got to come with the body to transport. And a lot of people believe that mind can fly. So as you go on, it becomes more and more ridiculous. So what we're going to do is, tonight I'm going to bring us back into all very, very practical things. Right? Into the very simple part of the Buddha's teachings. When we mention five aggregates, a lot of people think that it's a very, very complicated thing and then they shouldn't be dealing with it. They leave it to the so-called advanced Buddhists. Right? Actually, it's not true. Anybody who wants to be a practicing Buddhist, anybody who wants to practice meditation effectively, will have to have some idea about these five aggregates. Without the idea of five aggregates, you'll be meditating for nothing. Right? So when you talk about this five aggregates, it's got very strong connection with life. Now look at the life, the basic unit, body and mind. What is in this body? Okay. To the scientific in science and in whatever studies we are involved in, everybody has got a different way of defining the body. For the those people who are in, who are studying morphology and all this, they say, okay, you know, you've got the eyes, your head, your neck, and whatever, you know, you can see the external thing. Some people can look at the internal thing, talk about the internal organs and all these things, the physiology of it. whereas others can look at the body in its basic components, right? What are we made up of, actually? To resolve it into the most primary thing, we are made up of nothing more than carbon, nitrogen, hydrogen, all these atoms, various atoms, all these sulfur, all these base elements, manganese and so on, right? So this is what the body is made up of according to different viewpoints. But as far as from the Buddhist teachings, from the point of view of the Buddhist teaching, the body is actually made up of these six parts, the six sense bases. The body supplies these six sense bases. So, it's working. When you look at the body, it's got this. Number one will be these sense bases: eyes, ears, nose, five, body. Other than these four, right? That means, you know, this skin part and another part. And the six will be the, but usually it's not considered used brain, but I just put it in the comma, that is mind. If you want to make it very difficult, there's a lot of argument about this mind and consciousness, but just know that it's about this awareness. So this is what we call the six sense basis. Now the sense is very important. This is that the six will be the ones which receive signals from outside. So that's why when the body starts to function, all the six will start to function. For a person who is blind, of course this one will function and so on. We come to it later. But this is the basic six things. And other than these six, we don't have any more other senses. The sense of the eye, the sense of the ear, nose, tongue, body, and the brain. Now, with the body itself does not, cannot act with only these six without any other things. Now the other things will have to be the external things. The external things for eyes will be what we call form. That's a thing. A thing which has got a shape, a size, something you can touch, you can feel and all this, right? Then the second thing for ears will be sound. For nose will be smell, tongue will be taste, and the body is feelings. Now, it's not emotional feelings, it's just the bodily feelings. Like this, I got a feeling. I got a feeling. So that's the feeling. And brain, the mind and feeling will be thoughts. So these thoughts will be ideas and things which make us move. Now, even with this, when you've got six sense bases, this six external things, external objects, they still don't work either. Right? It's got to have another factor will be the consciousness. This consciousness will be the, normally we generally talk about it as awareness. The standard awareness. That means we are conscious. So we have got to have the eye awareness, eye consciousness, the ear consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, and body consciousness, as well as the mind consciousness for it to function. In other words, these are the basic ingredients required for things to happen. Things to happen in the way we mentioned in Buddhism, and the translation is to know when that for things to happen. Now, a thought is a phenomenon.
looking at things and reacting to things is a phenomenon, something which is happening. Right? So these are the, these 18 of them are the very, very basic things for things to happen. They can be, sometimes you need more conditions than that, but these are the very basic ones. So, without the things, then the eyes don't see. Right? If there's nothing there, I cannot see the thing. So the eyes don't see. When it's very silent, without sound, then the ears cannot hear. Right? So this is, when you want to say, when you have this thing coming in, then you say, you have the sight. When this is coming here, you get the hearing. Right? And then you get the smelling, tasting, and all these things. So this is the way, the basic ingredients for things to happen. So in other words, this body, full of these things, plus the external things, right, all its sounds and so on. Now, inside the body, we'll have this consciousness as well. When we are unconscious, we cannot see, we cannot hear, right, we cannot smell. Just look at anyone, you will know when you see somebody unconscious, that's what's happening. Unconscious people still got the brain working. Yeah. But when the person is dead, then it's a different story. That means all these things are gone, so nothing happens. But when you are unconscious, our physical, these five things, usually we do not have that feeling. So this is the way for things to happen. Now, for the things, again, we look at it, for us to see a thing, there must be the thing. There must be this eye consciousness. If the eye consciousness is not there, that means if the nerves are not connected to the brain and all the things, that person is blind. That means seeing doesn't take place. And when something is wrong with the ears, you know, when the eardrum is broken or malfunctioning of the ear, then the person doesn't hear. When a person catches cold very badly and the thing is not working, there's no nose consciousness, so the person doesn't smell. Similarly, the tongue, yeah, the same thing. And if you know the tongue, there's still taste buds in certain areas. So if that object doesn't come into that part of the tongue, then there's no taste. Depending on the body, there's no general body consciousness when the person is paralyzed or whatever, and when the nerves are not acting, then he doesn't have, he or she doesn't have anything. But when the person is brain dead, then nothing happens at all. So this sort of things will make the world happen. Now for all of us, that is where we start our creation. They say that the world is created by a superior being, it's not true. It's created by you, created by me. Your world is created by you, my world is created by me. Why is it that, you know, something which will please me, the same thing which pleases me, will bring this pleasure to you. Why? It's because we are different. Right? The difference in our consciousness and so on. Now, but the general awareness is the same. You've got to be aware of things. And you look at things, you know that the thing is there. That is the awareness we are talking about. When you touch, you can feel the, have the feeling, then it's a touch. Now these are the basic things which makes the world go round. For you and for me. Whether it's real, whether it's imagined, doesn't matter. Because when I really imagine it fully, then the thing becomes real to me. That's normal. And according to Buddha, all of us, right, being people who are not trained, and we don't have, the mind is not fully purified, everything to us is imagined. You see things, we all agree that this is a watch. Right? If I tell you this is a gold watch, some of you might believe it, some of you might not. Now, and because you see that, okay, how can it might be real, because you know, you say it's a gold watch. Some of you might not believe it and say, it looks as if it's just painted with gold color. So we all have our own way of looking at things. And this is where these five aggregates come in. So now we talk about this, how everything comes into place. Now when you have this body, body, in the scripture it says the body, that's the conditions the mind, and the mind conditions the body. It's a good way of saying that the body and the mind work together, and this is what we are. Now your body and the mind works. When you're listening, the body is working with the mind, the ears are hearing, and as you hear, it makes impact on the mind, on the brain, and then start to have things going. Now, this is the basic thing. That means body conditions the mind and the mind conditions the body. That means this person is ready to act. Right? And the action comes into, the first thing for any action to happen is contact. And what's this contact? This contact is when the eye meets object or form. Or the ear meets sound, etc., etc. Now, you've got to know that the eyes do not hear, neither do the ears smell. Right? So it's got to be corresponding. And when this meet together, and if there's eye consciousness, it's in the scripture, it says, when you meet together, the consciousness arises. So what it means is, when the eyes meet certain things, come to contact with certain things, then the eye consciousness will come up. So which means that eye consciousness, then there is sitting at sight. When you have this, therefore, there is such a thing as feeling. This feeling is not emotional feeling. It's not feeling being fully operated by thoughts yet. It's just that feeling. You look at certain things with a feeling. When there's a sound coming, that's like down there, somebody's talking now, there's this feeling under the ears. Right? That is a sensation of sound. So when is this feeling? Now, the moment you get this feeling, what will arise next will be the perception. We will perceive what it is. Now, when you talk about this body and the mind, this mind, meaning that they have this consciousness. The mind will have to have this consciousness. And in this consciousness, there is this awareness plus your things on your experience and our memory. Now these memories and experiences are whatever we have been through our whole life. Everything that comes to you when you are in a state of awareness adds onto your memory. Supposing you have seen something in the past and now something appears before you, the memory is triggered off and then you start to perceive the thing. So, like, if I take this pen, when you see this pen, what happens? The eyes come into contact with that object and then there is this feeling, and this feeling comes up with perception. You perceive this to be a whiteboard marker. Now, how do you know it's a whiteboard marker? Because in the past, you come to it. Right? For me, being of very great vintage, at up to a certain stage, I've never seen a whiteboard marker. Right? Because I wasn't born with it. When I was a student, we never have any whiteboard marker. We used to chalk writing on the wall. Right? So, this is the... Because you know it, because you have been seeing it many, many times in the past. Right? So when you see it, you get that sort of impression in it. And the impression is our memory. And the experience is the experience of seeing things. So when you have seen it, then you have this perception, perceive it to be something. But for things which we haven't seen before, if I show you, some funny things which you've never seen before, what is the perception? You still perceive the thing, but you perceive it as what the heck it is. You don't know. So you put it in a not knowing category. Now, from this perception, there will still be things, right? Whether you know or you don't know. Now, when you see this, when you have a perception of things, for example, when you have got
this one,
right? Okay, what's this? Your eyes come into contact with this. Yeah, this is a watch. Right? Now, mind works very quickly. The watch, you got a gold color thing. Can it be a gold watch or not? Can it be a gold watch? Is already far beyond that. Right? The perception is, it's a watch. There's this gold paint on it, a gold color watch. Okay? Now, that's perception. Because you've seen watches before in your life, and you know that this color is gold. Right? Everybody knows. But you haven't seen gold color before, then you say, what the heck it is. Right? The thing I show to some people nowadays that everybody has seen the watch. But when I was a kid, a lot of people haven't seen watches. Right? So when you see it, when somebody wears a watch in the village, you know, they show, what's that? Oh, it comes from England. What's that? It's a watch. Right? So this is the whole thing. Right? You perceive this a watch with a gold color. Right? Then after this, there will be something which just comes up again. Right? It's what we call, when you see it, a gold color watch. Is it an expensive one or is it a cheap one? Imitation or a genuine one? Right? It depends on you. Because of, again, through your memory and experiences. You have been conned before, right? And somebody has, like, looks like me, cheated you before and say, you know, this is a gold thing. Then you say, no, I won't trust it. So, I think it's not real. Right? Then, if you have full trust in it, I think that's real. Now, that goes into what we call mental formation. You already place your have an idea about it. You already place a judgment thing. Where this thing? Now, some of you might think this is a genuine gold watch. Some of you may think that this is a bogus thing. But then after that, this mental formation has got two parts. One part is to, after you perceive the whole thing, then you get some ideas about it. Then you judge it to be what it is. It's already made up your mind what it should be. Then the second part is what action you're going to make. Now, sometimes after this mental formation, we just dismiss the whole thing. Nothing. I'm not going to think about it. Sometimes after mental formation, you say, okay, now, there'll be this idea is coming up, right? In this mental formation, the idea is I'm going to ask him, or I'm going to have a close look. I'm going to ask what brand it is. Where do you get it from? All these things start from mental formation. And this mental formation, sometimes they use the word as volition. Through this volition, we have a lot of things like our intention of action, working on things and so on. Right? Now, it also make us have a very strong idea about things. Keep on having and reinforcing the idea. And then from there we have our action, it becomes words, and it becomes bodily action. Now, supposing I look at this cup. I like this cup. Look at how do I like this cup? Because I've got eyes, I've got this consciousness, awareness of these things. And then I come to contact with this. And I've seen cups like that. Right? Maybe I couldn't afford to buy it in the shop. And this looks like the same thing, like the real thing. I couldn't buy it. Now, all these are ideas generated by me through this thing. But from the beginning, it's just that I see this cup. I got a feeling, and the feeling is good feeling. That good feeling, then I like it. Then when I like it, what happens? I perceive the thing to be a nice cup, because it's a good feeling. Then I like it. It's only in my mental formation. And the second part of mental formation is I want to have it. And what follows next? I ask. You need to go, can I have this cup or not? What? And if you guys say no, never mind. When you walk away, nobody, then I put in my pocket, I take it home. So, the act, right, the intention of stealing is there. Right. So this is the way we are acting. Right. You can say in one day, millions of these sort of things have passed through our mind, right, through this body and mind of ours. Right now, when you sit down, supposing it's very quiet now and there's some noise down there, what happens? The possibility of things happening is great. Because you sit down there, finally, the ears are open, there's ear consciousness, quiet enough for the noise to come up, but not clear enough for us to know what the noise is all about, what the people are talking. So what happens is when you hear something, there's this perception of people talking. When you talk about people talking, then it goes back to the context of the brain, of the mind. It becomes a thought already. Then the answer asking is, what are they talking? Then you go, then you start to have these ideas coming up from the brain. Right? What are they talking? Then you hear some more, no. It's still mumbling, and we are trying to make out what they're talking. It goes back to perception again, it goes back to formation again. And sometimes this perception of ours, if it's blurred, that very blurred perception, then chances are our mental formation will also be blurred. But if there's some noise there, maybe the noise there, I think they are drunk. But are they really drunk? It's because of our memory, experience, all these things, our previous what you call it, the previous experience in us that make us think this way. Right? And supposing you want a very, very quiet time and you're making so much noise that you can't really concentrate, then what happens? In this volition, you get upset. Right? You're not getting upset with yourself, but upset with them. Right? You see, I'm trying to meditate here and this. These idiots here are making so much noise. It goes on, another idea, making so much noise. It just makes you more upset. Eventually, you either throw a bucket of cold water on them or go down there and challenge them and shut up and have a good fight. Right? So that's where all these unwholesome deeds come into being. Right? You can say that at this stage, when you talk about the intention of action and the action itself, this explains to you our very important word, right? Karma or Kama. This is where karma starts. So you go back again, from the body and the mind, there's this contact, there's feeling. And the feeling, you get pleasant feeling, you get unpleasant feeling, you get neutral feeling, okay? So we go a bit further on this pleasant, unpleasant and neutral feeling. When you get a pleasant feeling, what happens? You want it. You want more of it. Right? So when you got pleasant feeling, you want it, you want more of it. So we grab. Right? When you get unpleasant feeling, what happens? You want less of it. But if you can't get less of it, what happens? You still grab it. Grabbing is a negative grabbing. I can't get rid of it, so I'm stuck with it. That is the experience all of us have. When you see something really nasty, something really upsets you, will you be able to say, I'll shake it all away and then pretend it doesn't happen? No matter how much you tell yourself, that mind of ours is so strong in grabbing that we grab onto it and make it more intense. When you see somebody whom we don't like, maybe you have a quarrel with somebody in the past, and the fellow happened to be coming in front of you, what happens? It's unpleasant because they've got unpleasant experience in the past. Right? So that unpleasant memory is there. When the person walks past, it's just a human being. But for us, we perceive the person to be an unpleasant sight. Right? So the unpleasant sight stays there And the more you think about it, you're going more into this cycle, and the more, the worse it gets. Then even the fellow has passed, go, went to the whatever tuck shop and ate some very nice food, enjoy himself. We are there, fuming away. Thinking of what to do. I should have kicked the fellow's backside when he just passed me, or I should have thrown something at him. No. All these things, no, these are the intentions and these are the deeds. So our bad karma comes from there. Okay, so when we are present and unpleasant, we grab. Now, this grabbing in Buddhist term is called attachment. For us, we are attached to good things. We are also attached to nasty things. We are attached to pleasant things. We are also attached to unpleasant things. For us, pleasant, the way the attachment is different. We are attached because it's pleasing. It's pleasant, therefore we want more of it. We want it to stay forever. Whereas in the unpleasant, we want to get rid of it. We want it to be, not to be around straight away. Okay. Both are almost impossible to control. It's not within our control. And these things not within our control will bring us into the state of suffering. Now, when you look in within you, look into your experience, look into your whatever it is, this happens all the time. If you think that you have got a very, very nasty day, it's all because of this. All because of pleasantness and unpleasantness. And where this pleasantness and unpleasantness come from? From this feeling. And where does this feeling come from? From here. Now, so we put it simply, mind and body, which conditions each other to bring about contact, okay? And the contact brings about feelings. And the feelings brings about attachment. Now this attachment, of course, I'm not going to elaborate too much on this. Now this attachment can come in different stages. So maybe I should. Now, what when we trouble this attachment, there are different stages, as I say. The first stage is for craving to arise. Now for the pleasant feelings, we want more. For unpleasant feelings, we want less. And as we go on there, the next thing will go into clinging. Ian, have you got the somebody to talk on the dependent origination yet? Yes? Okay. So this clinging. Now at this clinging stage, when you have this pleasant, what starts, when we start to cling, what happens? We cling to our ideas. It gets stronger and stronger. We cling to ideas. We cling to our habits. It says, according to the Sita, it talks about rituals. The rituals is our habits. The way we do things. And ego. This is my way of seeing things. And when things don't happen your way, what happens? When things don't happen your way, suffering. So this clinging, I've shortened this thing, I go and say, this is suffering. This unsatisfactoriness. Now, ideas, habits, and egos. Very, very important because of our set way of looking at things. Supposing we go to, now in the olden days, people are very particular about, you know, when you go to dinners, they are very particular about how the forks and knives and all these things have to be laid. Right? Nowadays, everybody is very simple. They just put on the tissue paper and it's wrong on the plate and that's it. But then you go to a formal dinner, you've got this thing, and then if a four course dinner, you've got all this funny looking forks, funny looking knives, you know, all this around. And usually the fork is on the left and the knife is on the right. Okay? Supposing somebody who is a left hander puts it the other way and you walk in there, a lot of people walk in there and say, something is wrong. And something is wrong, if you say, okay, something is wrong, it's still alright. That means we allow less clinging here. Just let go, right? And then let go. Then nothing happens. But if we say we must hold on to this idea, right? Our habit, our ego and all the things, if my idea should be good and so on, then you will never enjoy the meal. So this is the way it is, when you look at it. So when you look at how we go from this context, this feeling into cravings, you have got this perception and volition. So, 1, 2, 3. And in the mind, there's this consciousness. So, 1, 2, 2, 3, 4. There's 4 parts of the mind. Plus the body, that's the 5 aggregates. So it's nothing difficult to understand, nothing difficult to think about. So don't think when you talk about 5 aggregates, it's not something which you need to be a PhD or Einstein to understand. During the Buddha's time, even the women who worked in the villages, in the fields, they understand the 5 aggregates, how the working for the 5 aggregates. So please remember, when you have got 5 aggregates, it's just the physical part of us, right? Plus the procedures, right? Somehow things happen. When you have got the body, you've got the body supplies the 6 sense bases, and then with the outside things, when it comes together, then that thing which happens step by step is called the 5 aggregates. The 5 aggregates is not actually a single thing. It's just the body plus perception, feelings, perception, volition, and consciousness. These are just the 5 of it. It's how this thing makes our world work for us. When you look at things, this is what it is making. This is the way it tells you what the world is all about. What you share, how come you have got good feelings with a friend again through this set of things. And these 5 aggregates have got a lot to do with dependent origination. In fact, it's a very, very important part of dependent origination. When I go into this part here, it's actually the first part of dependent origination. If you look at it, this is all to do with dependent origination. Dependent origination is preached by the Buddha in 5 stages, in 9 stages, and in 12 stages. And the popular way of talking of dependent origination nowadays is talk about the 12 stages. Because it allows a lot of schools of Buddhists to explain how this life cycle happens, right? How come, you know, after death this thing happens, you know, it's a 3 life cycle or 1 and a large life cycle. But if you look at it from the practical point of view, this dependent origination coupled with this 5 aggregates describes your life at this present moment, how you live. Now, supposing we train ourselves, right, to be able to be aware, be mindful, then we can be mindful at this part. Whatever it is, when with our body and our mind, we will always come into contact with things. Right? You will always come into contact with things you see, you open your eyes. You come in contact with sounds, whether you like it or not. You come into contact with, you know, the nose when you smell things. It comes to contact with the taste when you eat something. Right? Now, supposing you were to live in a very unmindful way, right? We are not mindful of things. We just go along with it. Right? It's just like, we just come up, down, and be a slave to our emotions. Now, when we talk about slave to emotions, that emotion can mean our ignorance. Now, ignorance of what? Ignorance of the actions of this. When we are more aware of things, then we can see this perception right from the beginning. Know that this is perception. When I see this, I start to have perception. I say, okay, this is my perception. After all, this is only an object, right? A form. Now, if I can train myself to do that, then I don't say, I like this, I'm going to steal it, or I don't like it, I'm going to throw it away. Take all this unnecessary trouble. Now, but if we, from the perception, if we go into this mental formation, normally it's quite difficult for us to stick onto this perception, find out this perception in the early stage. When you have this mental formation, then at least we also can bring our mindfulness in. Be mindful that this is coming up. My intention of wanting to get this is now within me. I'm feeling that I want to take it. And then I can stop doing it if I want to. So, it's on, not only on this sort of things, but it's on our emotions as well. But when it comes to the things which are to do with the mind, you find that a lot of things we think about. When you think about something, for most of us, we are scared of ghosts. So, what is actually ghosts? Ghosts are nothing more than, I wouldn't say ghosts, I wouldn't say much, but I just ask you, have you all seen a ghost or not? A real ghost? Many a times when I talk about ghosts, a lot of people tell me that they have seen ghosts. And when you ask them what ghosts are, they tell you something like they read in the stories. In the storybooks, the ghost is like this, the ghost is like that. And then some people see the ghost as they see in the movies. But do ghosts really exist or not? Do they exist? Have you seen a ghost? Have you come to contact with a real ghost? Have the fellow come and tell you, I am a ghost? Or have you brought the thing and say, are you a ghost or not? No. The ghost which all of us see are actually ghosts of the mind. I was talking to a group of ladies last night. Right? They are born and bred in Australia, and a lot of these Australian bred people don't believe in ghosts. But when I talk about they used to be ex-Catholics, right? And yet they don't believe in ghosts. So I told them about how in Philippines, they're Catholics as well. When they talk about ghosts, they cross their mind themselves about 10 times. But people don't do that over here. I know a very good friend with a pastor, a minister, a Uniting Church minister. He's a very good friend of mine. And he used to, and one day I get a friend from Singapore. She was telling me that how his minister over in Singapore was making a good business catching ghosts. Because in Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, and everywhere, and when somebody got mental sickness, they always get, in the olden days, they get the Taoist priest to come and, or the Pawang, they call it, to come and catch the ghost. But nowadays, they change, because Christianity is gaining foothold, so the minister becomes the exorcist. Right? So the minister will go there and brings a few things and just put a hand there, and then all of a sudden the spirit disappears. So I was telling him, your friend in Singapore is making a good business exorcising ghosts every week. So the minister told me, he says, if I do that here, Jim, I'll be out of business. Because nobody here, people here don't believe in it. I mean, 99% of people don't believe, only 1% of Australians possibly believe in exorcism. So, again, are the spirits, are the ghosts real? So you can surmise that, you can come to a conclusion that a lot of these things is in our memory. When I believe in ghosts, I dare not walk across a cemetery at night. I always think that when I walk, there's something following me at the back. Return back, there's nothing. When I walk, there's something. And worst thing is, these sort of things sometimes it stays on. It's memory and experience. Until you're mindful. Now, before I really get involved in Buddhism, I do believe in ghosts.
Everything you see sometimes, you know, when the table at night, when the door sounds a bit, and think, oh, there's ghosts around, there's spirits around. And go in. So they're not checked. Right? Usually you just put your blanket over and that's it. So this is the way we treat it. You know, the reason why we did it, because in most of the Asians, among the, I see Southeast Asians, the stories on ghosts is very prevalent. Right? From very young days, you know, grandma or grand auntie will tell you stories. Right? And then after that, when you're a bit older, watch TV, and half the TV are full of ghost movies. Right? So, now, that impression is there. It goes into the consciousness. Same thing with our likes and dislikes, our fears and so on. Right? Why do people have phobias? Right? We ask the psychologist, and they can tell you of past experience and all this. Right? So, because of that, then it gets deep into it. And this perception is something, when the time is right, when at the appropriate moment, that perception will come up. Even for things which just happen to us for a fleeting moment, as long as getting this. Let's believe in it. Now, let's see. Can I explain the hungry ghost in a different way? What is no in the Buddhist way of looking at things, hungry ghosts are just some poor beings who is forever hungry. You want something and you can't get it. So if you see your friend who wants something and cannot get it, very greedy, then that person is a hungry ghost. It's a real ghost in the case. But if you say that the hungry ghost looks like the little pictures you see in Chinese temple, you know, where you got a small little head and a big fat army, I don't think anybody has seen that. It's just in people's imagination. And same thing, a lot of people say that, oh, I've seen visions of Kuan Yin, or I've seen visions of whatever saints and so on. It's all in the mind. It's all the five aggregates working, and the five aggregates working in such a way that an idea comes up. Somebody will talk about a saint. In the West, they talk about saints. So, when they talk about saints, then people will think, if you've got family history of maybe an aunt who goes over to Spain and do some prayers and come back and get cured in the disease, then the saints work. So when you talk about saints, then you think about that. And the saint becomes real. Similarly for us, this five aggregates makes things become real for us. But if you don't believe me tonight, just walk alone in a quiet street and start to think about ghosts. And I can assure you the ghost is behind you. Similarly, as a lot of things, the non-ghost things, but a lot of other things happen. When you've got a fear, sometimes our fear are unfounded. And actually most of the fears are unfounded. And when you get this unfounded fear, it is an idea. And the idea is the brain coming in contact with the idea. Then this sensation of unpleasantness, and then you've got this perception of this being going to bring me into trouble. Right? And then whatever ensues is your attachment, and then it gets worse and worse. Right? So this is how the mind works. And when you look into the five aggregates, it's just the explanation of how our mind works. Right? If you're really within. So, in the teachings of Buddha, these five aggregates plays a very, very important part. It's so important that you find that in the kindred sayings, a large section of it is being devoted to the five aggregates. Right? Six sense bases, the five aggregates, they always come together. Right? And for people who are keen in Buddhism, they should know what five aggregates was. Before, if you do not know what five aggregates is, then there's a chance of them falling into misunderstanding of the teachings. Right. Now, more so when we get into meditation. Right. When I first learned meditation, the teacher or the monk started off with this five aggregates. Right. Because it's very important. When you are meditating, what are we actually doing? Right. For a lot of people, we meditate just to, for fun. recreational meditators, we call them, when they sit down there for 1 or 2 hours, they feel so good about it, and then go back and boast that they have meditated very well, but they're still the rotten old things they always are. But if we are really serious, like the monk was telling us, then you've got to learn the workings of the mind. Right? Because the Buddha's teaching is on the mind. It's not so much on the external thing, it's how we look at it. If we look at the second noble truth, right, how suffering comes into being, you find that it's because of this mind. Right? Actually, the first noble truth, we got the different kinds of dukkha, the different kinds of suffering. Birth, aging, sickness, death, and then to be with things which we do not like, and to not to have all the things which we like, and never satisfying our wants. And the last one is the workings of the five aggregates. That is the first thing. Now, why does the working of the five aggregates come in the first thing? Because as you can see, all these things lead into dukkha. Things which are pleasant, we keep on wanting more and more of it, eventually we will get into the state of suffering. When you pursue happiness and do not know how to end it, especially the happiness of the body, right? Happiness of our pleasant things, our pleasant to eyes, ears and so on, if you don't know when to stop, that happiness will eventually bring us into a state of unsatisfactoriness. Let's look, when was the last time you were really happy, and how long did it last? Similarly, if we stick on to this unpleasantness, then making ourselves unhappy and being attached to that, then eventually we will going to get into state of unsatisfactoriness. Right? So, whatever it is, how the body works with the mind, it brings us into unsatisfactoriness. So, in our training, the most important training is to have an understanding of the working of the five aggregates before you start your meditation. So the second night after we sit down, the first night we're wondering why you ask us to sit like this. Watching this, passing, falling. There's no meaning at all. So eventually you start to talk about the five aggregates. Talk about this perception and so on. Now, meditation is watching the workings of the mind. And what are the workings of the mind? Your feelings, perception, volition and consciousness. And we've got to understand, it's through this that the emotional states arise. Without all these things, there are no emotional states. So we've got to be very, very careful if you want to do something about it. So in your meditation, when you watch, the first thing is to watch of the body. The body, the various responses to the body, and then from there you get the various movements. Then after that, the second thing which is asked to be aware of is the feelings or the sensation. Right? And the feeling sensation, the pleasantness, unpleasantness. And then eventually looking into the mental formations and watch into the mental state. Because through the mental formations, through your intentions and all these things, you find that the mental states will arise. That's where the emotions arise, like the craving, the wanting more about it, the greed, the hatred and everything coming into the mind. And we've got to be aware of this. Then after that, you can watch the result of these things. That's the mental objects. And if we have got a good mental state, meaning that if we are able to see all these things and develop that into a positive state, then emotions won't arise, then there'll be calm and there'll be peace within the mind. And with the calmness and peacefulness, the mental object is the way to enlightenment. Right? So, if you are clear about this, then your meditation will work for you. If you're not clear about it, you can meditate for another 50 years, you'll still be in the same spot. So that's why nowadays, a lot of scholars and monks, they have come to the conclusion that we should really go into this part of the study. Right? It's not something which is sensational. It's not something which will change your life straight away, change your way of thinking. It's something which is more subtle. As you keep on being aware of things, you can see your progress. And it's no point telling people to control the mind. You can't do it. If you want to control the mind, you've got to start by understanding the mind. And how do you understand the mind? It's through observation and investigation into the working of the mind. And how do you observe the mind? Meditation. Just sit down there, watch the mind working. Okay, any questions so far? Presumably, when we are in formal meditation, for example, right? When you are sitting, and when you are sitting, usually in meditation we are aware of the breathing, right? Bringing full awareness in the breathing. So when we start to observe this attachment, right? It means that our mind has gone to that sort of thing, right? So the recommended way is to acknowledge that attachment. Okay? Now, after acknowledge the attachment, we got to develop the skill of being able to let go of the attachment and come back to the breathing. Okay? So this is the training we have. It's just like going to the gym, you have a formal training. Now, what happens when it comes to our daily life? When we are doing something and we are talking to somebody, and while in talking, we find that unskillful state comes out. That means you're starting to get angry. Turning the conversation into an argument, for example. Right? And normally, when we are not aware of it, it becomes argument, it becomes a quarrel. Right? Becomes a dispute. Now, supposing we have got the mindfulness to say, okay, now I'm getting into the state, agitated state now. Right? Now, it's no point just disconnecting. You can either stop the whole thing and walk away, but that's being very rude. Right? What you can do is when you start to know that, then at least we bring ourselves back to the original intention of that conversation. Right? Supposing we are talking about the weather, and then you say the weather is going to be like this, I say the weather is going to be like that, then eventually, you know, the emotions build up. You're wrong, I'm right. Right? So, at the stage, if you perceive, you can see yourself to be in that state. Then you say, okay, what is the original idea? We are talking about weather, we are not going to argue about weather. So, when you get all these things into perspective, then at least we can pull ourselves back. And then, same thing when you're walking, to the bus stand, then you see something really unpleasant. Okay? Now, without anybody, we are still getting this emotional state to see that particular sculpture. How can they have this sculpture so bad, so ugly, and so on? Then you're building yourself into a state. Right? And building ourselves into a state that is stressful. Right? Try to not to have said, okay, I just saw the thing. My intention is to walk there, not to talk about the sculpture. Finish. So, it is through this meditation training, right, in meditation now, in a very important part of our meditation training is letting go. Right? You have done a mindfulness training or vipassana training, you know. When you sit down there, distraction comes in, the thought comes up. Acknowledge the thought and come back. Right? This coming back is letting go. Right? So, actually it's not difficult to do it. But sometimes, because of our habits, because of our ego, we are quite reluctant to give up. Any other questions? Now before you come, how many of you thought this is a big topic? Now go back to life again, right? When you started, I said life. Isn't this life, isn't it? Well, you see, when the thought is, emotion is part of the thought, Do you agree not? The thought process is part of emotions is part of the thought process. It's through this thought process that you get emotions. And where do you get this thought process? Again, we can resolve it into beginning from our feelings, which we get when we come into contact with certain things. Then, with the perception, when the memory comes up. Now, if you get something which is really not just pleasant, but something which is very good, nice, and wholesome thoughts coming up, then emotions won't come up. Right? So, how do the emotion of love come into being? Right? Love is an emotional state, right? How does it come to being? It's through, it can come through the sight, right? And it can come through the smell. Sometimes people fall in love because of the smell. Right? So you look at a thing, and then you think, right? That is attractive. Right? And the thing happens to be, whatever it is, that's a love object. Right? You can love a cup. Right? You can love a pet. You can love somebody else in a different way. Right? But they are all emotional. Right? So why do I love my dog? I love my dog in a different way, for I love my dog, my wife. Right? I can't do whatever I do to my wife, to my dog. Right? So this is the whole thing. Right? But how come all this love arises? Right? It's because there's this idea coming up. And what sort of ideas? How does the idea arise? Maybe when I saw this little puppy there, right? I might have an idea of wanting to have a dog. It's already a condition there already. It's a thought already, right? And when I see the puppy, it feels the thought. It goes there, and then, but that particular puppy has got to appeal to me. That means it's got to look pleasant to me. So it looks pleasant to me, I become not only visually attached to it, but also mentally or in my mind, I'm attached to it already. So from there, the volition is there, arises. I want it.
So emotion derives from it's all collection of thoughts.
Yeah, it's the thought itself is you can say is the working of the mind.
But emotion is thought.
Yes, it's part of thought.
But thought comes and goes, but emotion can stay there for a while.
No, it's not the same. It keeps on. Either emotions will. Will increase or decrease, it doesn't stay at exactly the same level. You see that? Now, let's put it some other way. In the state of this, some people they love, they fall in love with somebody, okay? In a emotional sense, okay? So, when they first fall in love, there's this very strong feelings. Right? Then after a while, it might get stronger, it might get weaker. Yeah.
And thoughts become like very tricky.
Yeah.
I think emotions can stay for.
No, it's not staying, it's just one emotion after another. Yeah. So one emotion will. You see, from the things on what you see.
So when a thought doesn't come up.
No.
We actually don't have the emotion.
Yeah, what we think is a thought is actually a whole series of things happening. Millions of them in the day. Every time you see something. Or we hear something, we smell something, there's this so-called thought. And we don't call it thought, we call it this sort of things there. Everything we do, there's a dependent origination coming in. Right? It depends on what all this, every single thing has got a cause for it. Right? And you want to talk about the original cause? We don't have the original cause. It's there already. Yes, and you can see it's very positive. But sometimes the state of contentment, if you take it wrongly, again, it can make you very, very negative too. It becomes a state where you don't care. So you got to be very, very, you see, to us, these sort of things, you've got to be very careful about things. And it's this mindfulness that will bring us into that, to be able to discern whether this is harmful or this is good. If right now, being a student, if you say I'm content with what I am now, I'm not going to study anymore, you're going to fail. So we got to apply the sort of things in different ways. But if you say, if I'm not contented, then I've got to work over my limits to achieve the sort of things, then you got to think again whether it's worthwhile or not. So that's why we talk about this, this emotion. And that sort of contentment sometimes is being fueled by emotions as well. I hate the sort of things, therefore I want to be like that. I hate study, therefore I want to study. It's not that I'm content with what I have. Right? So, and the only way we can really find the real, the true thing is through our mindfulness. It's got to be developed by you, and you only will know it. And so that's why sometimes when people come for advice and all this, the thing that I'm going to give them, these rules and regulations, and they say, okay, go and look into it and just find your own level. Now these five aggregates also will explain how we act and react in society, in with other people. How we react and react with things within us. Now, usually it's easy to understand the things which are more physical, right? Like the things you see, the thing you taste, smell. The five physical senses are quite easy to understand. But when it comes to the thoughts or the ideas in the mind, right, the thought process is a lot more difficult. Right? And but the Buddha did say about this thought process, it's through that feelings that you get. It comes up. When it comes up, the mind feels something. Now, how it comes up, again, it's related to this five or the past. Right? How do you think? If you sit down quietly, close your eyes and notice why the thoughts arise in your mind. For those of you who has been doing your meditation, you close your eyes, sit down quietly, but why these thoughts come up? Now the thoughts come up because it's our nature. We can never stop thinking. None of us can ever really stop thinking. Because you stop thinking, you're dead. Those people who say when you meditate you stop thinking, it's not true. You only, a very skilled meditator will have only one thing in their mind, is to think of. That's the object of meditation. Skillful meditator will only have one thought, and that's to bring up the whole thing into that thought. And that's why we got the word one-pointedness. It goes into there. Now this one-pointedness will allow you to be able to get rid of all the other unnecessary thoughts. But that is not the training which we generally recommend to meditators either. But because that one-pointedness, if you are not careful, you get too peaceful and too calm, maybe lost. Lost in the whole thing. Lost the whole plot, actually. You'll be there to enjoy that peace and so on, and then you forget to look into the inner nature of your mind. So in your meditation, what we are trying to do is to bring ourselves into a certain level of calmness, then we can start to see how the mind works. That's not to answer your question, that's how you look at it. You look at, it's going this side, so let go. And Buddhist meditation mainly requires us to be able to let go of things. Right? In the scripture, it's mentioned by the Buddha that he abides looking at things coming and going, and not being attached to anything in the world. And not being attached doesn't mean that you leave this world and you don't think of anything. Everything you can see, the thought comes, I'm not going to grab it. The thought comes, I'm not going to grab it. But when you think, when I'm meditating, I think of my dog, I think of my wife, just passing thought. And that's the way. When you start to do that again, there will be a certain degree of calmness in the mind. When it comes, the mind will become very calm and peaceful. It's just like see a water dropping from a duck's body, that's the thing, that's the stick. There it goes, and as it comes, it goes. And if you really go for your meditation, that's what you should be looking at. It's being recommended by the Buddha.
So if you found yourself like having
motion
arrived already, and doesn't mean that you're already grabbing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, the grabbing starts very, very early. Right? When you look at something nice, before you can say it's nice, you're grabbing already. Right? So meditation means to be able to allow you to look at it when it starts. Right? And some form of meditation, they tell you to look at the little atom. Right? Nimitta, they call it. Right? So that little atom is the arising of this sort of emotions. So in the beginning, we always look for these negative things. Towards the end there, we're also looking at the so-called positive things. But when you're sitting down there, good thoughts come in, you're very happy, you're in the next world, you're in heaven and so on, don't be attached to it either, because that pleasantness, eventually when you got to get out, you don't feel that pleasantness anymore, you'll be in the dumps as well. So the most important part in the Buddhist meditation is to be able to aware of this whole process here. At any point of meditation, one of these will arise. And when it arises, if you can see it, then you know something about it. Now, why then we consider this knowledge of five aggregates and being aware of the aggregate working good for the life? As you said just now, you are being aware of all these things, and we can cut a lot of things off. So the Buddha in his teachings tells us that clinging, it depends on craving. If there's no craving, there's no clinging. If there's no feelings, there's no craving, right? But unfortunately, as human beings, we have got this. We must come into contact, we must have feelings. But from there onwards, all these things from this part onwards is within our control. Right? So what you can do is, either we cut off at this point, say, don't allow this to happen, or cut off this point. When you cut off this point, then there's no more suffering. So the way we cut off is to learn how to let go, letting go. Now the moment you are aware that my ego is coming up, that I'm feeling bad because somebody is not agreeing with me. Now when you look at that, when somebody doesn't agree with me, it will bring us into the state of anger. Right? Somebody, you don't agree with me, then you say, I'll let go of the thoughts. When you let go of the thought, you don't have this clinging. Right? And then you start to see, okay, and when you talk about this craving, the craving of these six things here, and the result of these six, the craving for sights and so on. So for us, we crave for nice things to look at, nice things to listen to, nice smell, nice taste, nice bodily feelings, and nice thoughts. But this does not happen all the time. And it's our nature to convert something nice into something not nice. For example, you come in here, I say, okay, sit in a very comfortable way. You sit down in the nice and most comfortable we can think of. Right? I say, okay, sit there for 2 hours. even when I don't tell you, how long can you maintain that sitting? Right? And what you think is a very nice way. After a while, what happens? Right? Habitual, right? We start to find something. Right? This is where the body comes in. And you sit down there, and you sit down, and there's suddenly a little bit of discomfort. Right? It becomes a thought, and this thought becomes a contact, and the contact becomes a feeling. It becomes an unpleasant feeling. It goes back again, goes round and round, the unpleasantness gets more and more. And therefore, you want to move. Right? For most of us,
We want to move because we are not comfortable in the last posture. Right? So this is what happens. And you say now, there's something nice, it turns out to be not very nice. So if you are able to look at it now, in your meditation, right, when you sit down there, when you sit down, at first the teacher will say, okay, sit comfortably, sit in a stable position. But after 5, 10, 15 minutes, you feel uncomfortable. Now, if you can look at the discomfort, right, and most probably the discomfort is just a very slight thing, but the whole thought has gone back to the mind and cycled a few times in it, and it turns out to be quite uncomfortable, so that you want to move. Now, if you can see that and know that that is the action of the mind rather than the action of the body, then santiya, you will be able to maintain the posture. So in many, many things we do in life, the same thing, the same principle applies. When you are getting into a very, very boring job, what do you do? You work in a factory, counting pay, counting bottles, six bottles a box. A lot of people tell me that they get sick of it. But why are they sick of it? It's a very simple job, very easy job. Why are they sick of it? Because we are not used to the monotony. You get an autistic guy to do it, they like it very much. Yes. So this is the whole thing. Yes. It's our nature. And this nature, where does it come from? If you look at the teachings of dependent origination, the nature comes from our ignorance. It's genetical. I mean, it's not genetic. It comes to time when, as human beings, we must be like that. Right? Point to me a human being, I can point to that particular person has got this ignorance in them. Right? And it's our nature to be restless. It's our nature to be upset with things. Right? Look at a little child being born. You put something nasty in his mouth. What happens? He gets emotional. You pinch him. He cries. Right? Why does he cry? It's a protest, right? It's an action, right? Because he feels the nastiness. So, even the time when we are born, we have got the thing already. Right? And as we grow older and older, we accumulate more. Right? People around us will teach us how to hate, how to like. Right? You should not do this. You should not do that. This is the way it should be, and so on. Now, sometimes the teachings may be right, good for our benefit, but sometimes it just adds on to our miseries. Well, consciousness is mainly the ability to be aware of things. Right? That's one part of it. Then in our Buddhist way of looking, it's got the element of memory and the experience. Now, where is it stored, we don't know. Right? That's why in the Buddhist training we say, in the Buddhist teaching we say, it arises. Right? For example, like now, when I'm looking at a chair, right, I've got eye consciousness on that object. Right? Because the eyes, the object, and the eye consciousness come, therefore I see.
Why do you call it eye consciousness?
Well, that's what makes me, you see, maybe I have to use my eyes and see. Now, supposing I'm blind, I got no eye consciousness. The ability to be aware of it, right?
What about a mind? How do you define
a mind? Mind consciousness is the ability to think.
So mind is, you say mind consciousness is different
thing. Sometimes you can say mind and consciousness, mind has got the element of consciousness in it. Like mind has, you see, the mind which you talk of here has got four components. Consciousness, the feelings, the perception, and the mental formation. So now, you talk about consciousness now, that's why we say consciousness arising. When I face that thing, I come to contact. Right? The moment I turn my head, I don't have eye consciousness on the chair anymore. Right? But if I still think of the chair, it's no longer eye consciousness, it's my mind. Right?
What about ego?
Oh, ego comes up with clinging. Right? When you say, for example, like you like this car,
Who likes this cup? I like this cup. So the ego is there already. It's the way I look at it. So the ego is that sort of thing which we build up to call our personality. And this ego is a very funny thing. It's not that, it's not the personality you build up solely. Although you build up, but you add things from outside. I've got my own nature. And what I am now is not actually what I want to be. People saying, it's what I think. People want me to be like that, so I must behave like that. Now I feel like putting my 2 feet on the chair. But I can't do it. Because I'm supposed to be a Dharma teacher. I got to sit down nicely like this. So that's how my ego is affected by other people's, what I think of other people's perception. Look at the way we dress. We don't dress solely for our own ego. That ego plus other people's, the ego derived from other people's thinking. We think other people think about us. When you look in the mirror, when you dress up, just look. I like this shirt, but it doesn't match. If they see, usually it doesn't match means when we think that other people are thinking badly about it. So put it back and wear another one. Until we come to the stage where we think that other people will accept. And that sometimes or usually is also a problem. Because from what you know, people don't care about it, about us. But it's just that because we are so self-conscious about it, and therefore we get problems. Self-consciousness is different from this consciousness. So how do ego arise? It's because we cling on to things, craving. Because I like these things. So eventually, it's the ego has got three components in it. I, my, and mine. My idea, my things. And usually, the worst is my idea. You can give up your things quite easily, but we cannot give up our idea. But if you were forced to give idea, we torture ourselves. We get upset, we get angry. Okay, any more questions? Now, the understanding of these five aggregates, now which can only, we can be derived from this conceptual understanding, but the most important of all is when you want to have a good understanding of these five aggregates, it's got to go through your experience. And the experience can be gained mainly from your meditation. Right? So when you look for meditation, shop for one which talks about mindfulness. Because this mindfulness is to be mindful of how the feelings arises and how the feeling, where it's going to lead us to and so on. Right? So once you start to have a very clear understanding of your five aggregates, your own, not others, then we can avoid a lot of unskillful action. Right? Unskillful meaning that any actions which lead us into stress and lead us into suffering or unsatisfactoriness. And when we can avoid that, then we can devote more of our time to develop the better side of ourselves. Right? So, when you talk about understanding the five aggregates, it's actually a training in developing a better personality. Right? And also, through this developing a better personality, it makes our life a lot easier. Now, just imagine if half your life you avoid quarrels and dispute with other people, what is left? A lot of people say nothing, right? Because they are unhappy that they don't make other people's lives suffer. But when you are able to act or react in a better manner, meaning that you become more skillful in your actions and so on, you find that you are not going to get too much stress. And basically, if you put in modern day terms, the teachings of the Buddha is to ask you to avoid stress, right? To get rid of stress. No. Dukkha is another word. In modern days, we can call it stress. During the Buddha's time, they have got dukkha. Some of the dukkhas are the same. When you think of growing old, it's a stressful thing. Right? When you think of getting sick, it's stressful. When you're in the state of sickness is stressful. Right? When you are with things which you do not like, it's stressful. So when you are able to look at the five aggregates to see where these five aggregates fit in for me to derive this stress, then if you can let go of that part which caused all these things, then life is a lot easier. Which means that when you understand the five aggregates, then you would have understand life, your own life. So in Buddhism it's very important. The study of the whole thing is to look at life. Now, the reason why the Buddha left his home to go for this quest for the truth is precisely that. Like that things which, you know, if you read the story of Buddha, a few things which bothered him, you know, what is this old age, sickness, death, right? And then a lot of these emotional states that drove him out of his family, to go out of his family life, to get to look for the answer. He found the answer. The answer is not from far, from outside. It's through looking inside, right? Looking what is happening within us. Right? Nobody can stop growing old. Nobody can be completely free of disease. Nobody will escape dying. Right? But how we look at it is a very, very important thing. Right? So when we read about some of the Buddhist philosophy to tell you that when you become Buddha, I see the Chinese Buddhist philosophy, they tell you it's a thing you can escape death and so on. It's not true. You don't escape the physical death, but you can escape the fear which comes with death. Right? When you die peacefully. When you get sick, you don't get all the stress of sick people. When see a lot of people, when they fall sick, what happens? They make themselves very miserable, they make other people more miserable. And that's why, you know, you find that in the hospital, near the hospital, not near just the hospital, but a lot of these psychologists and all this, you know, all the supporting things, right, to help them. Not to get, supposing a person who is able to deal with their sickness, right, they're in the hospital, they're able to say, okay, I'm sick, I got to have a treatment and so on. Right? I sit and watch my emotions coming up and down. Then you won't need all these other things. Right? Saves a lot of money from the taxpayers. Right? So, this is the whole thing. When you practice Buddhism, just try to look into it. Right? When we are stressful, we stress other people as well. Okay, so time for me to roll up all these things. Thank you very much. Okay, I think I finished what I'm going to say. Train ourselves, if really there's pain and we can deal with the pain ourselves, it's okay. But you can't deal with the pain yourself, go and look sick treatment. There's something wrong. I mean, there's
a lot of people, older people, too, in Malaysia, they can't get the grandma
I tell you, the philosophy of traditional Chinese women is they believe that when they are born, they're there to suffer. It's very, very, very stoic. It's a characteristic sometimes in a lot of these people. I see a lot of people like that. But Buddhism is not talking about this to be stoic. It's not. You know you're suffering, but do something about the suffering. I mean, you look at a Chinese opera. The thing is, when a woman comes off of the stage, what they do? The first thing is suffer. So. This is the thing, you know, in the Buddha's teaching is not that either. The suffering, you don't have to put the suffering to others, but you also get rid of your own suffering.
But then the hope that, the body has natural healing power, so it's like, oh, I'm going to go to the doctor, wait a few days and see how it goes.
Yeah.
But sometimes this topic is a bit untouchable.
No, you can tell them that you're sick, go and see a doctor. But the thing is, you can't really force them to. If they feel happy being in the state, then there's nothing much you can do about it. But anyway, sometimes we got to give our sympathy to them. Know that they're suffering and don't make the suffering worse. The worst thing is, you know, when you know they're suffering, you go there, "Mom, are you suffering or not?" If I were the mother, I'd just clobber you. Right. I mean, these sort of things, it depends on the personality. You know, you can't do much about it. Okay, Kenny?